culture when we speak. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what that experience was like for me. And then if you guys want to come up, there's about four students and one faculty member who's also going to share a little bit about what the experience was like for them. They all participated in really different ways in the week. And then there'll probably be a time for a question and answer and just to talk a little bit about your response and if you have any questions for us. So if you guys want to come up and just take a seat while we're talking, that'd be great. I also have some pictures of the week, so I'll probably show them at the end when I'm done talking. So my desire to start a conversation about human rights abuses and torture happened this fall when I was reading the news, and it just became a huge topic all over our country. People were asking, what is torture? And I felt like the Christian community should have something to say about that, and I was struck by, I wanted to know what was going on, I wanted to be educated, I wanted to know how I as a Christian should respond and what my position should be, and I just didn't hear a lot. And so I decided that I really wanted to like have a conversation about this issue because it just seemed to be such a big topic all over, it's all a huge topic all over the world, but also in our own country. So the idea of Torture Awareness Week really came out of desire for me to have conversation on campus about the question and to really understand how we as Christians are called to respond. And I felt a desire to really speak out and take a stand according to my conscience. And at the same time, I also didn't want to do that in a way that stopped conversation. I really wanted to create conversation. And if some of you guys saw what happened on campus during Torture Awareness Week, I'm not sure how effective that was, but that was my goal and my aim to do that. And we really wanted to ask questions and have dialogue. So it's really easy to have a bad view about activism, I think, and it was really an interesting process to try to do something more active on our campus. And I wrestled with a lot of questions, and I think I'm still wrestling with those questions. One is, how do we make people not feel guilty or shut down, even when it's something really uncomfortable? And how do we, but at the same time, how do we take a stand on a moral issue and a value issue? And how do we move people towards empathy and compassion and response instead of getting trapped in feelings of horror or guilt? Because really, it's about, you know, looking out into our world. And also, how do we avoid politicizing an issue or polarizing it and instead get to the heart of, you know, of the value issue at stake? And also, in terms of like activism, like with the human sculpture type things that we did, how do we avoid making it something that's symbolic and empty at the same time, sort of an abstract protesting, instead of how do people engage directly the concrete suffering of those who are suffering from torture, human rights abuses around the world? And then finally, how do students who felt really strongly convicted to take a stand on this issue, how do they take a stand on something and avoid being it being us versus them? You know, how do we invite people into the conversation? Because that's really was my goal. And so I really understood that this was like such a difficult topic to engage on campus. And how do we do that in a way that invited people to join the conversation and didn't make them feel shut out? Just because I know this is something that we're all learning about and none of us have really directly engaged, and there's always more to learn and there's always more to wrestle with. And at the same time, there's a really real danger, I think, in hurting those who have been experienced violence or been victimized in our own community by doing something. So the question of how far is too far, and exposing people to something maybe possibly traumatic that they haven't been exposed for with some of the things that we did. So my goal, first and foremost, was to be as thoughtful and sensitive as possible, but then also to really take a stand on something that I felt was critical and important, and how to move people towards compassion, because I think from compassion you move to empathy, and from empathy you move to solidarity, and from solidarity you move to response and action, which was ultimately the goal, but I knew we couldn't get there all in 1 week. So my first step, I guess, was to just have conversation. And I didn't really want to lose sight of the human face of torture. You know, if anything, like, that's why we had the human sculpture and the readings in the classrooms where people read actual testimony, because I wanted the students who participated to really actually use their bodies and really get into the experience and not lose sight that this isn't an abstract intellectual issue or a political issue even, it's a human issue, and how do we engage that on a human-to-human level? And so really wanting to break down those walls between the classroom and the campus and faculty and staff and students, because really it's about people who are suffering. And that's where I really wanted to begin the conversation. So I was really honored, I guess, to work with such diverse students and faculty and staff who participated in the week. And at the same time, I was really honored that people who may not agree or didn't know how they were supposed to be feeling about the issue or the week came to the forums, responded in classrooms, were asking questions and like having conversation, because that meant a lot to me. And I think there was just a spirit of humility, a quiet gentleness and conviction. And I'm really not sure, you know, ultimately it's really difficult to try to bring education and empathy and speaking out against injustice and combining like education and response and spiritual journey and all those things together in one week. I'm not sure if I succeeded, but I certainly learned a lot. And I felt that people were really interested in talking once they got over their initial discomfort. And I just couldn't believe how excited and energized people were for a week surrounding this issue. And so I guess looking ahead to like future student activism, I think that it's really students who have to set the tone on campus and to set the conversation. And I feel like for everyone here, you know, if there's an issue on your conscience, to go for it. I mean, it's so worth opening up conversation, even if it's difficult, because I think that really it's the students who have to set the tone and then call other people to partner with them and to join the conversation. And so I'm really excited to see what happens, because I think that just learning what I did from the way that I went about it and how many difficult questions and issues came up and how good it was to wrestle with that and decide, and I still don't have the answers about how it was done or the impact, but at the same time, I think that following one's conscience and getting other students to join and asking people, not saying if you don't believe this, you're wrong, but getting them to join the conversation has just been so invaluable. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what else is going to happen on this campus as a result. I'm going to show a couple pictures too of the week. These are just of the human sculptures that we did. Some of you guys saw them or didn't see them. But this was a way, I think, for people to really, those who participated, I know, had some really powerful experiences. And so I hope that they share a little bit about them. There's something about really making yourself vulnerable that it made me realize that I don't have a clue about the experience of torture, but it was a very moving experience. And it was good to frame it in terms of, like, really to think about in terms of faith, how I intersect with this issue in terms of my faith and how I feel called to respond as a Christian and how this community feels like they should respond. So those are the more pictures. Thank you.
I'm Carolyn. I'm the president of a campus club, a campus chapter of International Justice Mission. I apologize for my throat being scratchy today. And I just heard about Rachel's idea of raising awareness and drawing a conversation about torture. And it's something that I really care about, and I feel it's deeply related to justice issues, even if it's not exactly what my club does. And that's kind of the point, is just caring about justice issues and human rights in general, and working together for that. So I became very involved in it, and I was in one of the cages for an hour, and it was really interesting. Because, well, for one thing, it was really cold the day I did it. It was starting to rain. So my hands got really numb. And I was just like, I'm such a wuss. There's no way I could endure this. And there are people who endure far more than simply having their hands tied above them for an hour. And so there was that, just knowing getting a small taste of the extent of what some people go through physically, and just what, trying to imagine what that must do to their spirit, the kind of endurance or non-endurance, the brokenness that comes from that kind of physical pain. And then in the midst of that, maybe in the booth, it was really interesting to see the reactions of people passing by, because we were covered in burlap, which you can't see through when you're on the outside, but you can see quite clearly when you're on the inside, because it's kind of a mesh. And so I could see everybody passing by, and I knew that they couldn't see my face or anything. So it was really interesting to just sort of anonymously observe how people reacted to seeing this figure there. And a lot of people stopped what they were doing, even if it was just for like a second, to read what was written on the cage, the verse, and then the information about Torture Week, but mostly the verse, what Jesus said. And that was really, that was cool to see that people would actually take time out to just think about it, even if it was just for a second, and hope that they would carry that with them through their day. And then there was one time when it was getting really cold and I was not really paying attention. And all of a sudden I felt someone put their hands around my hands. My hands were, you know, raised above me and kind of numb by that point. And all of a sudden I felt these warm hands covering my hands, and I looked over and there was this girl trying to warm my hands with her hands. And she was shorter than me, so she really had to reach. And that was just really awesome. She didn't say anything, I didn't say anything, and she just stood there for a few minutes, and then she walked away, and that was really awesome. And just, I think that that actually does happen in situations. I think there are individuals within these situations who want to extend mercy to those who are being tortured, who don't agree with what's happening. Other soldiers, other individuals who want to try and extend some sort of mercy and say, we're not all like this. So,
Thank you, Carolyn and Rachel. I'm Doug Thorpe. I teach in the English department and got involved in this. Really just motivated by the fact that there were students, and particular students that I knew, who were very engaged with this issue, and that was inspiring to me, to be perfectly honest. So I ended up working a little bit with the committee, and then during the week, I found myself beginning class. I teach a European literature class right now. And I found myself beginning class many of the days with a poem that comes from an anthology called About Forgetting, or Against Forgetting, edited by Carolyn Forche, which is a collection of what she calls poetry of witness, poetry written by great poets, primarily the 20th century, who have themselves experienced torture or imprisonment, usually for working against a repressive government. And doing that, I found to be personally very moving, just to open class that way. And one of the things that it did for me was to raise the question about what is the function of a university anyway? What are we here for? And that was really deeply reinforced when I organized and with a few students read some of this poetry out in Martin Square while a number of students were hooded and strung up, essentially. And that was also an interesting experience because, you know, there is a feeling of vulnerability in standing out there in Martin Square as people are coming and going and just reading these poems. But there was also a tremendous sense of solidarity and community that came with it. These are words that perhaps are easily cliched, but I felt I had a very strong feeling during that week that we were functioning as a university was supposed to function. And I'm not sure I can easily articulate exactly what that means to me, but it has something to do with awareness, with being aware. It has something to do with engagement, and I think it has something to do with a prophetic dimension to our call as Christians, especially on a Christian campus. And that's something I wrestle with, and a number of us had to wrestle with as we were planning this week. In fact, one of the big issues was, one of the things we're used to on this campus is we can tolerate controversial issues to an extent if they are presented in an clearly educational forum. We have room to hold that in an educational forum. But do we have space for human sculpture, for events that push those boundaries a little bit? And what's the appropriate degree to that? These are real, live questions, and I don't know that we've solved those questions, but one of the things I loved about the week was that it did push outside, push the edge of that a little bit. And I found, at least, that it profoundly fulfilled my sense of what a university is for, especially a Christian university. And again, it's not so much a matter of choosing one side or another. It's not primarily a political issue. At least that was my understanding. It was really a spiritual issue. Really. It was a soul issue. And when I talk about solidarity, I really mean an awareness of what the other person is experiencing. And I think this is what Christ calls us to, is that profound awareness of what the other person is going through. And as an English teacher, it connects very deeply with my subject, because I think literature is one of those gifts that allows us to cross some of those boundaries. The other thing that I would add, and I think it's sort of an extension of what I'm saying, is that I found myself thinking more deeply and harder about the meaning of the cross, and had this sense that there's something about our very profound desire to try to solve things at times through acts of violence. I mean, and this is torture, the point of torture, presumably, other than just pure sadism, which I also suspect is true at times, because I think we all have somewhere in us some very dark aspects of ourselves. But if we understand torture as positively as we possibly can, there's an assumption that there's some information that we're trying to extract, we're trying to get, and there's something crucial, that something is being withheld from us. And torture is a way that we try to get that, just as war, you know, is an attempt at its best to try to arrive at peace, to arrive at some kind of true solution. And in the context of the cross, I found myself thinking, well, you know, again, a cliche, but Jesus is up there being tortured, and there are individuals down below him who are essentially mocking him, saying, if you are indeed the Son of God, you know, send a fleet of angels, you know, come down from the cross, save yourself, and so on. And one of the criminals there with him says, yes, you know, do it. And I know for myself that there's part of me that wants God to do that. This is like all the great Western movies I've ever watched in my life. You want the cavalry to come riding in and wipe out the bad guys. Right? We want God to descend. We want God to show, yes, this is the way, and wipe out the Roman soldiers, establish, you know, the temple and so on. It's a very, very deep, profound feeling. And during this week, I was just very deeply aware that it's precisely, you know, God is being tortured, not so much the physical torture as this profound spiritual torture of choosing not to do anything to end the torture. right? Because presumably God could. God could. And the very nature of God's love is to allow God's Son, Jesus, to experience the worst imaginable thing. I mean, that's where the torture lies, and that's precisely where the love lies. You know, that is the only way that love works. So there's a sense in which we cannot end torture by further violence. I think that was one of the messages I really got during the week. We cannot do it by further violence. That is not God's way of inviting us to experience love and transformation. So it was a very powerful and rich week, and I'm grateful for those who brought it into being.
I'm Megan Millar. I'm a student who didn't know much about torture before Torture Week, and I still feel pretty uninformed because there's so much to learn, but I guess I'm just a testimony to the fact that you don't have to have all the answers before getting involved in something that you think is important. My involvement in Torture Awareness Week included reading the story of a torture victim to various classes at SPU. This torture victim, Juma al-Dasari, was seized in Pakistan in 2001 and is being held as a prisoner in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. He reported that he had been severely tortured at Guantanamo, including very severe beatings. He has scars all over his body from these beatings, and many other detainees have come forward as witnesses to his torture. Before reading Juma al-Dasari's testimony to various classes, I reminded myself in the classes that I was reading to, that as Christians we believe that we are all made in the image of God. And I found that this profoundly impacted the issue of torture for me, that it just shaped the way that I thought about it as a Christian. There are three points I'd like to make about what I learned through my involvement in Torture Week. First of all, reading about the horrific elements of torture out loud made me very uncomfortable. I did not enjoy reading Juma al-Dasari's testimony because it opened my eyes to unbearable pain and suffering. And I didn't like knowing that our government caused that suffering. Because the government is meant to represent the people, I am partly responsible for Juma al-Dasari's torture. However, stories like Juma al-Dasari's have to be told, because as uncomfortable as it makes us to tell them, we must give those who have been silenced a voice so that the world can respond appropriately. Secondly, Torture Awareness Week made me realize how uneducated I am regarding issues of social justice. I found as a college student that it's very easy to become self-absorbed. However, as Christians, we're called to work towards justice and mercy, which requires that we look outside of ourselves and seek to understand our world situation. Thirdly, I was impressed by students who wanted to learn more and respond after being educated about the injustice that is happening in the world and even through our government. The value of education is that it draws us to compassion and action. I think that education is worthless otherwise. We are so privileged to receive the education that we do at SPU. It is our responsibility to use the power of our education for the greater good. The question that I want to ask us today is, how can we create a community that moves from knowledge to responsive action?
Hi, I'm Kelsey Hudson. I just wanted to express to all of you that there is something very loud and strong and complete silence, and it oftentimes moves you in ways that you wouldn't believe. Being a part of Torture Awareness Week was one of the most eye-opening experiences I've gone through. I was being exposed to torture victims' testimonies, pictures, and tears, to being a human sculpture outside with burlap over my face, around my body, and being surrounded by a sharp wire. It was really experienced to never be forgotten. I believe that it was a privilege to be able to stand outside with my hands bound, faceless, for those who do not have a voice, for those who do not have the option to go back outside if the weather turns bad and starts to rain. And a big difference between you and them is very plain and simple. They do not have the choice. They are unjustly beaten and ridiculed, while others in different countries have no idea torture still exists today. And one of the most moving and encouraging things I experienced was the gratitude and thoughtfulness of people who warmed my hands, thanked me for what I was doing, and prayed for those who are the real victims of torture. And to see the student body come together and participate in something like this at a Christian college was very inspiring to me. I know it was a subject that could be taken very badly, by means of like too much gore or exactly what to show and whatnot. And I believe that we did do a very good job of what people to think and want to know how torture is going on in the world today and also to change. People might think that torture is still is not going on today, and if it is, then the U.S. is surely not involved, but the U.S. is involved. And one thing I'd like to share is a thing called Extraordinary Renditions, and the Amnesty International is concerned by the practice of this, in which the United States is transferring individuals for interrogation to countries with a record of using torture. U.S. laws and international treaties prohibit the transfer of suspects to countries where they are likely to face torture. But nonetheless, the U.S. government is reported to have been sent or been complicit in sending individuals to countries such as Jordan, Morocco, Syria, and Egypt. And they are all countries that the U.S. has criticized for practicing torture. One of the things that I just really can't let go is the thought that we just leave it how it is. Yeah, we did a week of torture awareness, but that really just isn't enough. It's also not enough to make this yearly thing here at SPU. It bothers me to think that people are exposed to this and they do nothing about it. I would encourage you to tell others, inform others, to allow them to be more aware. Write letters, circulate petitions, do all that you can to make this a widely known subject. Let's talk about it during lunch and ask questions to our professors, colleagues, and friends. Let yourself go beyond what you and I think we are capable of, and in turn, we will have others thinking. A lot of the afterthought that I had after Torture Awareness Week was over was mostly about what I could do personally. And I have been struggling with this, and I really haven't come to any sort of conclusion yet. But I know soon, with the assistance of God, that it will be shown to me. One thing that's very encouraging is that nearly 1,600 high schools and college students are involved with Amnesty International, which is a worldwide movement of people who campaign for internationally recognized human rights. These student groups, they write letters, hold public demonstrations, undertake education projects, and meet with government officials. Students take action to protect individuals at risk of human rights abuses, like arbitrary detention, torture, and execution. And maybe this is something you or I would like to be involved with, and I really encourage that. In conclusion, I kind of just want to thank everyone who participated and for everyone coming out today, and again, I just encourage you to think about things and see what you're called to do.
I'm Mark Daly. Basically, like a lot of other people, the thing that impacted me the most about Torture Awareness Week was being strung up in a cage for 2 hours. After 10 minutes, your hands get numb, and you sit there and try to think of a good excuse why you can leave early or something like that. and it was really tough just sitting there, wanting people to respond but not really knowing how you want them to respond, not being fearful that somebody is going to ridicule you or deride you in some way, and you almost get prepared for that, but then maybe to your surprise, maybe not, the response you're most often met with is just ignorance, basically. People just ignore you and walk on by, and it's in some ways almost more frustrating, I guess. It's nice that people aren't ridiculing you, but you always wonder, is that person walking by because they don't know how to respond, or do they just not even care? Which in my opinion is almost worse, maybe, than having a strong opinion, which I personally disagree with, even. But the one thing that hit me most was when I was strung up in the cage. I think it was about an hour in, and I was just really tired and really drained and didn't really want to be there, and it was cold. And then somebody, I was keeping my head down at this point, so I didn't know who it was, but they stepped just right in front of me and just stopped for a second and just said, thank you for doing this. And just, it was a really small interaction, a really small, you know, in almost intangible encouragement, but it just really hit me and got me through the next hour and kept me going. Just the fact that there were people out there who cared and thought about it, and in retrospect, it's really interesting to me how I was there for 2 hours. There's people who are strung like that for days, and that's probably like a mild example of torture. I was having so much mental trouble with it, but then this one person who just encouraged me, it meant so much to me, and it gave me the encouragement and strength to get through. And it really made me feel like what we were doing seems so small to me. You know, 1 week of torture awareness, like Kelsey said, is just nowhere near enough. And I feel like we should be doing something, and we should be doing something, but I also feel like I don't know what. But it was really encouraging to me that what we are doing, while to me it seems so small, hopefully will be the thing that gets somebody else through the trauma or the effects of torture. I doubt that many people will ever hear about what we did, but the idea is that we're standing in unity with other people all over the world who are advocating for the same thing we were, human rights and the end of torture, and it just makes me very, keep using the word encouraged, but it encourages me greatly to know that the small actions of people who are speaking out against torture and human rights, I think have a big effect, and I am very, very happy about that. That's all I have.
So thank you so much for listening to us. I think that all of us just have a profound sense of, it seems weird to say gratitude, but I think that we were really humbled by what we were able to do, and humbled by the ways in which the very small things carried us through the week and spoke to us, and just really humbled by the fact that we are so insulated and get so wrapped up and self-absorbed in our daily lives, and humbled by the experience of suffering that so many people go through, in our midst even, you know. I think that not just on this issue of torture, I think that my sense of compassion for those who are suffering in general was expanded. So I guess I just want to open it up now for just questions that you guys may have about anything that we said, or things that you've been thinking about, responses to the week, etc.
I want to thank you guys first for organizing and doing that. It was pretty amazing to see on campus. I think that the world thinks that people who experience torture are objects. They think of torture as sort of an object as opposed to engaging the people who are doing it and suffering it. When you were involved in this on campus, how did you feel when you felt people were either interacting with you or just interacting with the object of the human sculpture as opposed to the person?
Something actually I just remembered that in many ways humorously addresses this, but at the same time I think there's a deeper thing we can see in it. And I'm sure a lot of other people heard similar things, but when I was in one of the cages, two girls walked by, and I could hear them talking about me a little bit. And one of the girls was saying, no, I think he's real this time, but yesterday they were plastic. I went up and checked. And I stifled a laugh, because now we were all real. But in retrospect, I mean, I was thinking, this may be stretching it, but maybe that was a way of coping, a way of removing, like, I don't at all mean to disparage this girl, but I mean, maybe in a way that's an unconscious way of dehumanizing, in a way, I said way a lot, a way of dealing with it by thinking, no, it's not really a person, it's a big plastic dummy, whereas in the cases of torture, this isn't a human, this is a terrorist, this is an insurgent, this is an inferior, subhuman, something along those lines. And so I guess, yeah, I'd say I experienced something like that in a really strange way, but yeah.
I also have something to say about that. There was a couple of times when I was in the cage also, and people would walk by or come up to me, mostly just walk by or from a distance, say, it, and, you know, just the sentences with calling me it, and that really kind of spoke to me because it was very, very dehumanizing, and I felt like an object, even though I knew that I was a person in there. And then there were often times when there are people who would come up to me and say thank you, and there are people that would say, you know, God bless you, and you're amazing that you're doing this, and just talk to me, and that was just incredible. And like the difference between the two, I can't even, it's really unreal to explain. I can't explain it. The feeling of knowing that I have an actual identity and I am a person in this community, and for someone to call me an it was just, it's really hard to explain. Yeah.
Has this been done on any other college campuses that you know of? Anything like this, or is this completely just kind of original?
I haven't heard of anything that's happened. I mean, this is really, yeah, I haven't. I'm hoping and would be interested in something similar happening in other campuses. But I really haven't heard anything in terms of student movements that have been addressing this. It's, you know, in general, there's just been a lot of, just don't hear anything in terms of silent. It just seems silent, you know. But I think that it's a conversation that students, we really have the ability to participate in, and especially as Christians. And it's not so much necessarily coming at like a conclusion of, oh, this is what we need to do, or necessarily like anti-administration, but it is really engaging it and confronting it. And I was really moved because almost the day after the week ended, and Christianity Today, actually, the cover story this month is on torture and why, as Christians, there's a case that we should oppose torture. So I think that there's conversation and there's a move to respond in some ways, but I haven't heard of anyone else who's done anything similar. So
the goal necessarily in your mind is awareness, mm-hmm. basically, or to actually act?
It's both. I mean, I understand that it's attention. It's awareness to how people think, to create conversation, to dialogue about, what's going on in our world, in our country, and understand the positions and understand the complexity. So that's the educational aspect of it. And the action part of it is for people who feel convicted. I would never, the goal is not to get everybody on campus on the same page on this issue, because that just won't happen. But those who do feel compelled to respond, it was to move them and get them connected with groups like Amnesty International or IJM or any other groups that are continuing to respond to injustice issues.
It's interesting to recognize that the word education comes from a root meaning to lead forth. And I'm partly saying, you know, following what I think Megan was saying, that if we hear a lot on this campus about engaging the culture and changing the world, there's clearly a pretty direct statement about engagement in some sense. And so awareness, I don't think awareness or education exists in a vacuum. I think that Megan is right, that awareness, a deep awareness, and a pursuit of the truth, which is what we're here for, I think should really ought to lead to a sense of engagement. And that engagement can come in a lot of different ways, and there's going to be a lot of different opinions. And I think the forum that we had here was a good example of that. It wasn't so much that, as Rachel said, it's not so much that everybody has to join Amnesty International. It may be that there'll be folks who will be on a very different place with that. And it's for them to engage from their point of view, their understanding of the truth, to act according to that. And we're blessed to live in a society that allows us to do that to a great extent. We have a fair amount of freedom to engage in a variety of ways, as was demonstrated here on campus. What most strikes me is that for all the power of witnessing those who are in these cages, and what I'm also hearing is that there's this distinction between knowing that in an hour you're going to be able to walk out of there. There's just this profound psychological and spiritual experience that I myself can't even begin to fathom, of knowing that you are utterly at the mercy of somebody else's whim and will, and who has the capacity of physically, psychologically abusing you. I mean, it's that profound sense of just absolutely being at the mercy that is almost beyond comprehension for those of us who've not really experienced it. And this week was an attempt, at least, to imaginatively try to place ourselves in that kind of situation, knowing that, of course, we can't really be there. But nonetheless, you know, I think the witness, the testimony is that you still get at least a taste of what that's like, and that makes you empathize, that makes you feel for the victim. And out of that comes a great desire, I think, to do something.
I would like to know how you came up with the sculpture idea.
Well, I wish that Melissa Warren was here, because she is a theater major, a freshman, and we had the idea. A staff member here, Kevin McMahon, has done other types of active education on other campuses. So he has worked with human sculpture before, and from the very beginning we thought about using this as a way to, you know, do something that physically allowed people to engage it in a way that was outside of their normal class boundaries. So we had the idea, but I didn't know who was going to be able to do it, actually. And she just had the skills, and she designed the sculpture, she built it, she sewed all of the garments, and I wish she was here, because I know it's been a profound experience and journey for her to do that, and to use her gifts in that way for the work of justice, in a way. So we were really blessed by having her give her gifts, and I know that she's putting together a project right now called Behind the Burlap, which is actually going to explore what people's experiences were in the sculpture. So yeah, it's really a blessing.
Can you talk about any kind of reaction you got from outside of the campus community?
Yeah, there was actually, it didn't actually show, but King 5 was here for part of it and interviewed me and interviewed the students who were standing in Martin Square hooded. And that was just a really interesting experience to know that people were watching and were aware and trying to understand what we were doing and why. So I didn't hear very much more about just outside community responses, but I did hear a lot about responses from within the community. And a lot of people, I mean, overwhelmingly what I heard was that people who never would have been talking about the issue of torture were having conversations about it within the classrooms and outside. And that it was a disturbing thing, but people wanted to work through it, to wrestle with it, to see how do I engage this? And so that was really powerful to hear that there was conversations happening all around campus about that, and people from the outside who may be on our campus perplexed by what was going on, but also moved to dig deeper and find out what it was all about. So,
did you guys have any outside response?
Well, I think we have probably time for like one more question, so. Okay, we're going to close with the reading of the poem.
I'll take any excuse I can. It's the English teacher would be coming out. This is one of the poems that I was reading in class and was also part of the pamphlet that we used outside. It's a poem by a poet named Nazim Hikmet. He's a Turkish poet who spent a good 10 years in prison for work that he was doing in opposition to the Turkish government earlier in the 20th century. And this is a poem that speaks to his experience in prison. It's quite short. It's called, "It's This Way." I stand in the advancing light, my hands hungry, the world beautiful. My eyes can't get enough of the trees. They're so hopeful, so green. A sunny road runs through the mulberries. I'm at the window of the prison infirmary. I can't smell the medicines. Carnations must be blooming nearby. It's this way. Being captured is beside the point. The point is not to surrender. And I think what he means by not surrendering, of course, is that you don't surrender your spirit, ultimately. That you still can experience something of that green, something of that spring that is there outside of the prison windows. And in that connection, that's what he's talking about. He's talking about a basic connection to the world and to that life that is going on outside. So to me, it's just a beautiful affirmation, actually, from a prison perspective of a way of not losing hope, and a way of going on. It's this way. And of course, I'm remembering that in our context, way also is that way of the Logos, the way who is the truth. And I think that's most deeply what he's pointing to.
Just want to thank all of you guys for coming here and sharing with us, and then thank the rest of your committee just for bringing this issue to campus and really expressing the heart, I think, of this university and taking what we learn, our education, what you're gaining here, and using it to experience, and to further learn in that experience, and to change yourself in that experience, and thereby changing circumstances and changing the world. So I just want to thank you all for coming today and remind you that next week we are having another practice in Alexander Chapel. It's Silence and Solitude by Laura Partridge will be leading that. So a chance for us to take what we know and practice it. So you are dismissed.